The time is 6 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time now for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher and host every second Monday of the month, where I typically interview teachers and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today in the studio, we have Rachel Haynes.
Hi.
And Rachel, I'm excited to announce, is going to be co-hosting with me. And this is her first run-through. So welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then in the studio as well, we have Alicia Chavez.
Hello.
Hi, Alicia. And we also have Jeffrey Fuller.
Howdy.
So you guys, tell us a little bit about where you teach, what you teach, a little bit about your background.
I'm a teacher at Reynolds High School. I teach high school social studies. Teaching background, I don't know, I've been subbing in for about 4.5 years, and I've been a classroom teacher for about 4 years now.
Great.
I teach at Atkinson Elementary, and I'm a kindergarten through second grade special ed teacher. This is my fourth year teaching, but I've been in the field working with students with disabilities for about 15 years.
Okay, great. And Rachel?
Yeah, sure. I am a second grade teacher currently. I've been a teacher in Portland Public Schools. This is my 11th year. I started as a middle school special education learning center teacher, did 1 year fifth grade, and have been second grade ever since.
Gotcha. Okay. So before we launch into our topic, I'd like to just hear a little bit more about what inspired you to become a teacher.
I actually tried not to become a teacher for a long time, but I kept finding myself tutoring, working in writing centers, working as a graduate assistant, and I could never get away from it. Something was always pulling me back, so I finally embraced it when I was around 32 years old and dove in.
So I'm kind of the opposite. I knew I wanted to be a teacher when I was very young. And I started babysitting and all that kind of stuff when I was 12. And then I got into working for Parks and Recreation with kids with disabilities. And what inspired me to be a teacher is I was helping a high school student with Down syndrome on homework. Mm-hmm. And actually she was in community transition, and this is back in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And I was looking at the work that she was doing, and my feelings was, you know, the students with disabilities are very capable. And it was, so that kind of inspired me to change the way that the world in some way and be a disability advocate and, you know, push inclusion and all the beautifulness that comes with that.
Great.
I was definitely more on the Jeffrey side of the spectrum. I did not want to work in a bureaucratic system that I felt like stifled creativity and learning at the time when I was younger, and
but you got over that.
yeah. I did have a strong sense of like sort of teaching kids how to be in control of their own thinking and learning and life, and to feel empowered. So I did a lot of work outside of schools for a long time before I finally went back to school. And I was 37 when I went back to school and got my teaching degree, and did a dual dual master's in special education and general education, and also had a similar idea that I wanted to kind of break down that idea of what school has to look like and who gets to be included in that, and basically destroying everything about standardization and how toxic that is to kids feeling empowered and valued and having a place in our education system.
Great. Well, thank you. So our show today will focus on the Oregon Education Association, or a lot of times we will probably abbreviate it because that's a mouthful and just say OEA. But when we say OEA, listeners, we're talking about the Oregon Education Association. And we're going to talk about the representative assembly, which took place just a couple of weeks ago. Had you all been to representative assemblies before?
This was my first time.
Okay. And this was my second time.
Mm-hmm. I was not there this year, but yes. I have been for several years.
Yes. Yeah. All right. And so for those listeners out there who aren't familiar with OEA, it's our state level's teachers union here in Oregon. We have locals or local unions, which are usually formed around a school district, although we do have some community college employees. Then OEA, which ties all of the locals in Oregon together, and I believe there are about 100 locals, and last I saw there were about 44,000 members. And then there's the National Education Association, or NEA, which oversees the states and has over 3 million members. So OEA is governed by a set of bylaws, policies, standing rules for the representative assembly, resolutions, legislative objectives, quite a few things, and then new business items. And the annual representative assembly is the only place where all those things can be amended or new ones can be proposed. And any change or new proposal must be voted on by the body of the representative assembly, which this year was made up of, I think I had heard it was just a little under 600. I think they had anticipated about 600, and there were a few no-shows. They were just a little under 600. Unless any of you wants to talk about the other documents, we're just going to talk about new business items today from this year's assembly. New business items, or NBIs, again, we might shorten them to NBIs, are short-term actions. Some of the other things, resolutions, are longer term. And if they are passed, then OEA is supposed to take that action, at least for the following few months or the following year. And I emphasize the word supposed to because there have been times when it seemed like the follow-through has been a little bit lacking, although I'm not sure if that was so much intentionally or possibly it was about capacity or just misunderstanding the intent of the NBI. So this year there were three NBIs or sets of NBIs that were really interesting and that I'd like to spend our time talking about now that I've given everybody a little intro into the world of the OEA Representative Assembly. We had really three sort of themes, I guess, that I would call them. And first one, we had a number of NBIs that focused on racism, the school-to-prison pipeline, and Black Lives Matter. So, Alicia, you brought one of those NBIs to the floor, and it passed. So tell us about that one and about the discussion that followed. And I just want to also say that, and for all of you listeners out there, we all know each other already. So I'm hoping this can be a little bit more like a conversation in the time that we have left, and a little less like a formal interview. So, Alicia.
Yeah, so the NBI focused on partnering with organizations for advocacy groups throughout Oregon for Black and Brown advocacy groups. And this was to plan and put on events around the state that calls attention to systemic oppression. And it was an interesting NBI. I think a lot of people got caught on the wording and the groups and what groups were going to be involved And so it was interesting to kind of hear people. I was expecting a little bit more push, and I was pleasantly surprised that there was not really a lot of push. So I'm interested to see what this NBI and how OEA is going to take the NBI, mm-hmm. and what events they're going to put on around the state that calls attention to the school-to-prison pipeline, racial profiling, and all that kind of stuff.
So I had a question, and I wanted to know, Stephen, maybe that you remembered this, that a couple of RAs ago, I feel like there were some other NBIs trying to do a kind of a similar thing, to have events or to have a task force or something that was going to look at racism and, you know, through our union on a state level, and that the first year that that was brought up, there was pushback. Do you remember that? And I feel like it didn't pass the first year, and then the next year it did.
Yeah, I don't actually remember that, but it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think that there's been some movement as far as within the union, what people are comfortable with and what people are starting to see is important that we address in schools.
One of the things I found I found really nice about the conversation was it was more about how do we include more groups and not pushing back on Black Lives Matter, which I know, unfortunately, has a tendency at times to be unnecessarily controversial, mm-hmm. for people that have never actually taken the time to look at the platform and know what it says.
Mm-hmm. What I thought was really special about this NBI in particular is, Sorgan, so there were a lot of educators of color who came and spoke for this NBI and helped collaborate to make this NBI better. And I think that speaks very highly of this, is that there were people at the table that should have been at the table to plan around this. So it was awesome to see.
Yeah. Well, a little later, we passed an NBI calling for OEA to promote the Black Lives Matter Week of Action in schools. Anyone, any thoughts on that one?
My hope is that OEA works to promote the platform and educating what that platform actually is, rather than just promoting, oh, Black Lives Matter. Well, yeah, and I agree with that fully, but I also know, like I said, it's an unfortunately controversial in some areas, even though it shouldn't be, but it's because I think most people don't understand or know what the platform actually says.
And right. I'm hoping and there were three demands. One was about increasing the number of teachers of color. One was about having ethnic studies or African American studies, having programs in mm-hmm. schools. And then the third was about restorative justice, yep. which I've just heard that Portland is moving away from at this point. At least that's what the superintendent is intending.
Well, we have a collaboration, a relationship with Resolutions Northwest, who has done training and professional development for teachers and administrators in schools that are interested in implementing restorative justice. And then in some cases with some buildings, they have hired somebody through Resolutions Northwest to be a restorative justice coordinator within the school. So Madison is one of those schools, Madison High School. And when our entire equity department was cut, which just happened, and all of our teachers on special assignment were cut, and so was our relationship with Resolutions Northwest. And people are, for good reason, quite upset.
Oh, wait a minute. This wasn't a collaborative democratic decision that was made in the district?
Why, no, it wasn't. And so I know there is a budget hearing at King's School on Tuesday, tomorrow, right, at 6:30. And it's supposed to be a listening session, although I hear there are limited spots to sign up to speak, which is an interesting way to hold a listening session. But there will be students from Madison High School speaking about their support for their restorative justice coordinator, who has been at their school for years, and they has a relationship with staff, with students, with families. And they see this as a great loss. And not only do they want that position reinstated, they also want restorative it to be expanded so that every middle and high school has a restorative justice coordinator, specifically or first in schools of with kids that are schools that are majority minority population. So,
gotcha. Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and wow, we are already halfway through our show. This is why it's so hard to do a show in 30 minutes when we have so much to talk about. So let's move things along. We did pass an NBI asking for OEA to do a report on the actual platform from the Movement for Black Lives, which is really extensive, and it does include some things like reparations that I think will be interesting to talk about in next year's rep assembly. There were also a couple of NBIs that focused on the militarization of our schools, meaning bringing in guns into our schools. Jeffrey, you brought up one that focused on armed police, usually called school resource officers. Tell us a little bit about that one.
So Alicia actually talked a little bit earlier about the collaborative aspect of the OEA's representative assembly in creating NBIs, and I was able to work with several other people in rewriting an idea that had been brought forth. And it was based around school resource officers and police in the schools in an effort to define the role of police and SROs in the schools. Not in an effort to say, oh, if this kid broke blank law and they have a warrant, they can't come and do their job. But in an effort to say, hey, these two kids got in a fight, and when an SRO tried to break it up, I mean, if a school management team, which is not police, was a part of that, and that person got hit, well, fine. Maybe the kid gets suspended. Maybe they even get expelled for hitting somebody. But if it's an SRO, oftentimes they get arrested for a felony assault on a police officer, which just increases the school to prison pipeline. And so it was the idea of the NBI was to try and create rules and change up the role of SROs and police in the schools a little bit so that we can reduce that school to prison pipeline.
Great. Well, that was followed up by an NBI that focused on JROTC, which is our it's basically a program that, it offers some positive things as in terms of a place where students, I think some of them really feel like they get some attention, they learn some self-discipline, they learn about leadership. So, there's some positive aspects to the program, but it's also, the bottom line is it's about, it comes from our military, right? It's about trying to recruit people into our military. And, again, I think should be pointed out that the school shooting that happened at Reynolds High School, which is where Jeffrey and I work, and also the one at Parkland, both of those shootings were done by students who had been through their JROTC program. So there's some concern there.
I think what was more important than the fact that they went through the JROTC program is that they learned to shoot military-grade weapons that they brought into the schools through the JROTC. And that was the bigger concern that I understood coming out of that NBI.
Right. Well, unfortunately, that one didn't pass. There were some real impassioned speeches from folks who had some real strong feelings about the military, about the JROTC program and what it had done for them or someone that they knew. And Yeah, and so that one didn't pass.
Can I ask a clarifying question about that? Yeah. Was it about getting removing JROTC programs altogether, or was it specifically looking at military-grade weapons
training? It was about removing them and using those teachers. So I know that in our school, those teachers are great leadership teachers, and they have a lot to bring to the school. But that MBI was about removing the JROTC as a recruiting tool that, as the author of the MBI, I think, would argue, preys on the poor. And you see the biggest JROTC programs in schools with the highest minority and poverty populations.
Yeah, I don't think Lincoln High School or Lake Oswego High School have JROTC programs. So one more MBI that that we talked about was focusing on the Star Spangled Banner, and that was written by a racist and Francis Scott Key, and there were even verses in the Star Spangled Banner that have been removed that spoke about killing black people who had joined the British in order to try to actually gain their freedom. Imagine that. They wanted freedom. And that one was debated for about 45 minutes, which I considered a success, but it was voted down. Any thoughts on that?
I think, you know, you said it best, Stephen. There was a lot of debate about this NBI, where there wasn't a lot of debate about the NBIs around Black Lives Matter Week of Action, putting on events with Black and Brown advocacy groups, or even the platform for the movement of Black Lives. But with that, with the previous NBIs, you can kind of ignore them. You know, an educator wouldn't necessarily have to do Black Lives Matter Week of Action in their classroom. You know, you cannot show up for the events. You cannot read about the platform of Black Lives Matter. But Star Spangled Banner was huge, and people weren't willing to understand their whiteness, and that was right in their face, which I felt was very interesting. And a lot of people were really caught up on the word racist in the NBI, the racist Star Spangled Banner. And they wanted to amend the NBI and take out the word racist. But it's a fact that the Star Spangled Banner is a
which racist. I was actually okay with. I would have been fine with that. Yeah, and I should say, I don't think I specified that. I just said Star Spangled Banner, but the NBI was actually to not sing it at the beginning of the Representative Assembly, and then there's only one other event where we typically sing it. So so that was the NBI there. Guys, we are quickly running out of time. We're going to skip over talking about the NBIs related to Puerto Rico, and we're going to cover that next month. Rachel and I are going to talk about that and have a guest in. So let's move on to our last NBI to talk about, which was asking for OEA to support a new group that's forming here in Oregon called Oregon Public Employees United, somewhat in the mold of similar groups that formed in West Virginia and Oklahoma and Arizona. This is a Facebook group, but also a group of actual people who have had a couple of meetings now, attempting to bring together rank and file union members, educators, as well as bus drivers, cafeteria workers, other unionized public employees. And this is a group that wants to grow in numbers so that eventually we are big enough that we can exert the pressure that we need to get our legislature to do the right things and to support our schools and our public services the way that they should be supported, instead of, well, I'll leave it at that for now. What are your thoughts on the group? What am I leaving out that's important?
About the group or the NBI?
Well, either one, wherever you want to go in our last 5 minutes.
I was incredibly disappointed at the pushback to ask for OEA to support this group. It wasn't even a mandatory like support financially, and everything would have been left open, but because there was the far-fetched possibility of a pretty intensive cost to OEA if they had chosen to support the group and the group had decided to go on a statewide wildcat strike and this and that, then it possibly maybe could have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And because of that far out possibility, it was voted down. And I was just dumbfounded by that.
Yeah, there were all the discussions seemed to be on, or maybe I shouldn't say all, but most of what I remember was focused on cost. And I had specifically written it, leaving out cost and saying that there wouldn't be any cost. And I even made a statement saying, well, can we just leave out cost? What if we only get support that is not financial? But that didn't happen.
Well, since I wasn't there, what the pushback was mostly about cost. Was that pushback from leadership in OEA, or
no.
Was that from rank and file?
There was no pushback from the leadership.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I found that throughout the OEA RA, half the pushback on everything was about cost. People were really concerned about the possibility of costs that would have been that the leadership could have opted out if they'd wanted to, based on the way the MBIs were written. But they voted down several things based on cost, including that one.
I've seen that happen before too, and I think if we're to write something again, we need to specify exactly what sort of support we want and just put things in there that have no cost, right? I mean, we could, if we had written it differently, we might have had some support in terms of maybe just with some emailing folks with the Facebook page information. Maybe they would have been willing to do that, right? So now we're trying to do outreach ourselves without their resources, which is it's just more of an effort, and it's gonna take more time. So anyone listening who is a member of a public employee union, or who knows someone who is a public employee union member, there's a Facebook group. Get on Facebook. Even if you don't like Facebook, just for that reason, just get on it for that reason, and search Oregon Public Employees United. Oregon Public Employees United. Got that, everybody? And we're going to get this done. We're going to put an end to the cuts that our public schools have been facing year after year. And we are, aren't we, guys?
Yeah.
We're fighting it right now.
Yeah. This is a grassroots movement. It's the only way we're going to get our politicians to listen to us. Oregon Public Employees United. Anybody have any last thoughts you want to share?
Thanks for having us.
It was great to have you all. Thank you, Rachel. I'm looking forward to hosting more shows with you.
I'm looking forward to hosting, co-hosting. Right. Yeah. Right.
And thanks, Alicia, for coming.
Thank you.
And thanks, Jeffrey. See you tomorrow at the high school.
Maybe. It's a big school.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Thanks to our engineer, Mike. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Steven Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Save the VA from Privatization on Wednesday, May 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Save the VA from Privatization, a forum of veterans, VA Caregivers and Union Activists, features prize-winning journalist Suzanne Gordon, who will discuss the value and importance of the VA healthcare system and the current threats to the VA